Blog Talk Radio.
CrimeWire, an elite team of veteran investigation experts, along with noted crime consultants and attorneys, often featured on the popular news programs for families of violent crime to find answers and seek justice. The CrimeWire team, Vito Colucci Jr., private investigator and author, Denny Griffin, retired investigator and author, Tom Shamshak, retired chief of police and private investigator, Susan Murphy Milano, violence expert and author, are there, on top of the crime, at the top of their game. CrimeWire is a place for information, news, safety, and most importantly, justice. Our interactive website is www.crimewiresite.com. And you may call in any time during the show. The number is 646-478-0982. And remember, you can participate in tonight's show simply by going to the live interactive chat room right here on Blog Talk Radio. If you are a friend or a family member and you'd like to send the CrimeWire team information on an unsolved case or suspicious death, or you'd like to be considered for a segment on a case for a future show, then please email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com.
On January 1st, 2009, Sheena Morris was murdered in her hotel room, yet authorities quickly labeled the death a suicide. Sheena was found hanging by her neck in the shower, hanging by one of the Yorkies, her dog leashes. The crime scene was most fascinating, as were the circumstances surrounding her sudden suicide. Sheena placed a call to 911 the night before her death, reporting domestic violence by her dangerous boyfriend. She even took pictures of her injuries, a cut on her neck and on her ring finger. Joining us this evening are Sheena's mother, Kelly Osborne, and Dr. Michael Berkland, forensic pathologist and crime scene analyst. Sheena Morris would have celebrated her 25th birthday yesterday. And Kelly, let me begin with you. What can you tell us about Sheena, not just about the death, but about the person?
Well, Sheena was a person who had a lot of friends. She grew up in Clay, New York, which is upstate New York. And she maintained a lot of her friendships there when she moved to Tampa, Florida. Resided in Tampa, Florida for 4 years. She was a type of person who made friends very, very quickly. As a daughter, she was an amazing daughter. Would walk through the door and have flowers for me, flowers for her grandmother, and ready to cook with her stepdad, and her father and stepmom would all come down to Florida, and we'd all be together like one big family. Things were good. Her personality was extremely vibrant. She lit up a room whenever she walked through it. You couldn't help but to notice her. She was very, very beautiful, but she wasn't just beautiful on the outside, but she was beautiful on the inside too. The type of girl that, you know, someone called her at 2 o'clock in the morning and said, you know, hey, I need to talk. She's right there.
And she would have been 22 at the time of her death?
Yeah, she was 22 at the time of her death, and yesterday she would have been 25.
Okay. Dr. Berkland, I'd like to ask you a question. I was reading some of the reports about the about Sheena's death, and I see in one report that there were no fingerprints found at all in the hotel room, not Sheena's, not her boyfriend's. Is that your understanding of the scene?
Well, I think they did very limited processing. They very quickly, you know, determined that this was a suicide, and they really did very little else. There's virtually nothing in the way of any forensic reports done on this case. They pretty much jumped to the conclusion right off the bat that this was a suicide. And so they did not expend much time in processing the scene at all, which is extremely unfortunate because the scenes are usually fairly non-forgiving. You usually don't get more than one shot at it, and that unfortunately that's always the first shot is always your best opportunity to garner all the information that's available. Whether or not you ultimately wind up utilizing it or not is another issue, but when you don't even bother to collect all of it initially and you miss processing something valuable, like in this case the shower floor, you can't ever go back. And unfortunately, I think that would have had at least a major piece of the answer for us had they done that.
Doctor, I heard the term back, I think I first heard the reference to this back in the O.J. Simpson trial back in 1994, I believe, rush to judgment. They were talking, of course, then about charging O.J. Without doing an adequate investigation. But is this type of thing, arriving at the suicide conclusion with minimal or no investigation, would that be a rush to judgment?
Well, it's a rush to judgment, but more importantly, it's what I refer to as tunnel vision on the part of the investigators, the responding police initially, EMS personnel. Basically, everyone that sort of arrives there sees this sort of hanging situation, and they know that about 98% of these cases represent suicides, but they forget that there is 2% that don't, and so those are the 2% you wind up investigating for. And in this case, when you fail to do the investigation, you miss that 2%.
But I think if we go back to, the events that don't play into this, doctor, which is a 911 call, which other information, which is somebody in the next room, there's factors in here that it's clear, with all due respect and to my law enforcement community, people that I work with across the country, this is in no way towards you, but this was crime scene 101, and damn them for not doing their jobs, because they didn't. They didn't do simple, basic things because, in my opinion, they don't have the training and the skills. This is New Year's Day. They're up all night or whatever. They're tired. Maybe they're playing cards at the station, whatever they're doing. And, they missed a lot of things here.
They did, and it's hard to pin down exactly who takes the cue from who. Having done hundreds of these kinds of cases, what typically we see is that when you ask the crime scene person, well, why didn't you do this or why didn't you do that, they basically point the finger at the lead investigator and say, well, I'm there at their direction, what they tell me to do. When you ask the lead investigator, they throw it back on the crime scene and go, well, they're the crime scene person. It's up to them to decide if they're going to collect something or not. And so basically it's one of those things that each person's pointing the finger at the other one, and the job still doesn't get done. In this case, I'm sure there was a consensus at the scene that they quickly developed tunnel vision and quickly decided that this was nothing more than what it appeared, except it wasn't. And so they put on their little tunnel vision goggles, and they couldn't see anything other than the stuff that substantiated their story. And they didn't do anything to find the stuff that told a different story.
Kelly Osborne, go to us, if you will. It's New Year's Eve. What can you tell us that your daughter is doing that night or has plans for?
Well, that night she's pretty excited because her cousin is going into labor and ready to have her first baby. And Sheena's been all excited about this all through her pregnancy, so she had plans to go to New York as soon as she had the baby to spend 10 days with her. And, of course, she's texting all her friends, wishing them Happy New Year's. She spoke with her grandmother at 10:30 that night. And just before leaving for Anna Maria Island, she had gone to her hairdresser's and gotten her hair done.
Is that in Florida?
Yeah, Anna Maria Island was where she was found deceased. It's about an hour and a half away from where she lived in Tampa and where I reside. And she did not want to – at first, some of her text messages were showing that she did not want to go, and she was making excuses like, I'm not leaving my babies on New Year's Eve. so I'm not going. And then the other thing would be, well, I don't have any clean laundry, so I'm not going. So somehow she winds up, her two Yorkies, she always referred to as her babies. And so she takes them with her to the hotel, even though it was not a dog-friendly hotel. So the do not disturb sign was put on that door for 2 days. So needless to say, there would have been fingerprints in that shower after 2 days, because there was no room service, no cleaning. And even if there was, you don't get a shower that clean to not have any fingerprints in that.
When's the last time you spoke with your daughter?
Just before she went down there, the boyfriend had driven her by the house so she could put her car payment and cell phone payment in the mailbox so that we would have it.
How did she seem to you?
Well, you know, her and the boyfriend were having problems, and on Christmas Day, they were here. She seemed pretty irritable with them. Things kind of went, you know, by the wayside for the holiday. And then it was my understanding that they had gotten into a big fight Christmas night, and she had broken things off. Ended the engagement, the so-called engagement, and just before leaving to go to the hotel, she had gotten her hair done and told her hairdresser that she was really relieved that this relationship was over, you know, that he was, you know, too old for her, and she was just really ready for it to all be over with.
And so they're celebrating, so this is kind of her last, you know, time with him, and they're celebrating, but what happened?
Well, what he was trying to do was tell her, you know, let's get away, you know, to think about this. But he always did that. He always seemed to want to take her away whenever she'd break up with him.
So his pattern was not scary or anything. She wasn't afraid. She just thought that, she just thought that there was, you know, always an issue that he would just come back and have the same pattern of conduct, so to speak.
Well, whenever they would break up, it was always this huge drama. He would, you know, harass her, you know, via text messages. He would follow her and show what places that she's at, and so, you know, it was a huge drama issue every time they did break up, because he would cause her so much grief and havoc all the time.
So when you know, Denny, speak to this.
Yes.
About a lot of the relationships and when they break up.
Yeah, I was curious. The breakup thing, you say, I mean, they've been having kind of a rocky relationship. Would that be a safe phrase or safe term?
Yes, it was on and off for 2 years. He was much older than she was, and he was very controlling. You know, he'd tell her what job she could accept, and if it wasn't good enough for him, he'd say, just stay home. I'll give you the $50 for the day. You know, paying her rent, her car. It was very much a control issue.
When they had their arguments, their differences, did it generally get down to violence? Was that kind of his pattern too, or no, was that rare?
Well, unfortunately, through my investigation of 2.5 years, I find out that this man...
No, Kelly. Go to what she does or doesn't say to you while she's still alive, not through your investigation.
There was only one time that she shared with me that he actually pushed her to the ground. What I do know from her roommate and her best friend that's been her best friend from childhood, that there was a very verbal abusive situation that happened in her presence one night. But I have found out from others that he has had some issues with the domestic violence.
again, we're talking about before, you know, while she's still alive, and this is what this goes to. It goes to a lot of times that they don't come and say anything. Like, we had Jackie Waller's family on then last week, week before last, and here's her father, law enforcement. They didn't know what was going on in their relationship. And it goes towards, they think they can control it, they think they can get out of it, everything's going to be okay, and they often don't tell their family, do they?
They don't tell their family, and you know what, really, Dr. Berkland said a few minutes ago that as far as crime scene examination goes, you usually get one shot. You get one bite at the apple, and you have to do it and do it right when you get that opportunity. And it's when you misjudge, when generally a woman misjudges the domestic situation, I'm becoming more and more convinced that when they think they can handle it, they don't want to burden their family or friends with what's going on in their life and so forth, and they figure they can deal with it themselves. It's almost that way, a one-shot deal, two or maybe three or four shots, depending on how long the violence goes on. But when it's not reported and the victim keeps hanging in there thinking, I can handle this, I can control it. And once they realize they made a mistake, you've had your shot, it's too late then. You can't take it back. You can't go back and call a timeout. And it's very, very disturbing because week after week we hear these cases, that go on, and the abuser is a smooth talker or what have you. He says, oh, you know, I'll never do it again, blah, blah, blah. Give me a second chance or a third chance or a fourth chance. And the victims, think it's going to be better next time around or this and that. And they take the person back, resume the relationship. And then, unfortunately, in many cases, it ends up getting worse and sometimes ends in death. And it's really an absolutely frustrating situation. And the thing is, when there's no precautions taken, such as, I know I've talked about this, I guess, every week, but the evidentiary abuse affidavit of when the woman, and generally it's a woman victim, feels they're being victimized and in danger, they need to get that documented. And, so if something does happen, the police are going to have a document and a video to know exactly where to start looking and who to go after.
Dr. Berkland, does this anything have to do with anything, the fact that the way the investigation doesn't go, is it because it's a small beach community? Does that have something to do with this?
Well, that's certainly part of it. This is a very small law enforcement organization down there, and so consequently, they probably only got a couple of investigators at the most. They don't have a high rate of homicides and violent deaths down there. They have a fair number of deaths, but most of these are elderly people, or they're naturals or accidents from motor vehicles, stuff like that. They don't have a high crime rate down there as far as violent deaths from homicides. So the net experience of that entire law enforcement agency is probably quite minimal. And, of course, they all take turns getting these cases. That's assuming they have at least two of them to divide them out amongst. I suspect that any time there is one, that everybody pitches in on it. But the problem is you always got the same set of eyes and the same sort of mentality approaching these things. And therein lies the problem. If the person is demonstrated before that they quickly form tunnel vision, having that person do your next case with his tunnel vision goggles on is probably not the best choice.
That's right.
Dr.
Berkley. Okay. Kelly, let's go towards, now it's, when do you get the phone call that something is wrong with your daughter?
Well, the next day I got a phone call from the boyfriend, and
we should just explain that Mr. Organized Crime Family Connection, flooring person in Florida, but we're not going to name him, but he is the one that calls you.
Yeah, he called me. he called me and let me know that he and Sheena had gotten into a fight that night. And
at this point, was she already deceased?
There's no clarification to that. They didn't really give me a time of death. They gave me the time of death of when they found her. They said that because it depends what the temperature was and what lights were on and things like that.
So, but
that
when he
calls
you, is it already, has she already been found and pronounced dead?
By the time he calls me, I don't think the police even arrived to the hotel room until 2.5 hours later. But the interesting thing is that when he does call me, he informs me about this fight that they had and that he left, and he left my 22-year-old daughter in a hotel room in Anna Maria Island after this fight. And while he's talking
Let's talk about the fight, about how she places a call to 911 and says her keys have been taken,
mm-hmm.
and that she can't leave. And we have it recorded. So she's not able. And for people listening, on the Justice with the number 4, so it's justiceforsheena.com, you can look on the website and find much of this information, documentation, and a family who's been fighting for justice since their daughter was killed. So you get this.
When he calls me, he tells me about this fight, and so needless to say, I'm trying to get a hold of her, and I'm not successful. So I'm starting to have her friends try to get a hold of her, and so I'm thinking, well, if he's not calling her back, or she's not calling her boyfriend back, then she's probably mad at him. I asked him if he had left her any money, and he said yes, about $100-$150, which is not true. There was no money there. And I said, well, knowing Sheena, she would just take a cab. She's that independent. She would have just said screw it and get in a cab and go home the next day. They had broken up many times. It was never really a big issue, and actually she moved on and would date someone else very nice.
When do you officially learn that she's no longer here?
Well, it's about probably a little after 6 o'clock at night. I try calling her cell phone again, and I get a call back. And I'm very excited because on my caller ID it says Sheena Cell. I answer it, and there's no reply back. So I'm yelling, Sheena, Sheena. And I said to my husband, I go, it's Sheena. I think she's been kidnapped. I hear a man's voice in the background, and I'm very upset, very concerned. My husband grabs the phone and takes it over. After a few minutes, he hands me his cell phone, and he says, you need to call 911 and find out what's going on. I go, why? What is going on? He said, I heard police radios in the background.
Okay.
So they had accidentally messed with her phone.
Do they ever call you and tell you what happened? Do you ever receive an official call is what I'm trying to get at?
I don't get anything until later that evening when two Hillsborough County police, not Manatee, what they did was they asked Hillsborough County to come and show up at my home and tell them that my daughter's deceased.
Okay. And then from there, you make phone calls, you learn. Do you try to contact the person with whom she was dating at the time?
Well, yeah. I, of course, I was talking to him, throughout the entire day, and I even had him call Sheena.
No, I meant after you find out. After you're given word, do you then speak to him after that?
Well, what happens is, the police are here, and I'm breaking down, and my mother and my husband, the police are here. He approaches the house, and
so
there was another officer.
Wait, stop. Okay, Kelly, stop.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to have enough time to get through all this in this hour.
Right, I know.
And I can do that because I know you. We should
yes,
also point
I called
out
him, and
that,
I told him to get his butt here.
Okay, so does he come?
Yes.
Okay, and is he wearing, what is he wearing, a short sleeve, a long sleeve? Do you remember what he's wearing?
That night, I don't remember what he's wearing, but when her stepmom and her dad came into town the next day, her stepmom told me that he was wearing a long sleeve turtleneck. I know what I was wearing that day.
And
that
was
a short sleeve shirt.
Okay.
It was like,
Denny,
well, it wasn't
Denny,
that warm, 90, but it was warm.
It's pretty hot, Denny and Dr. Berklin. It's kind of obvious, you know, if you don't want to, if there's exit wounds, you know, any kind of wounds, defense wounds, you're going to have on long sleeve shirt, aren't you, Doc?
Well, you're going to want to cover it up so you don't have to come up with a, you know, if you don't have a good story, we don't want to force them to come up with a bad one so they just cover it up so that nobody asks.
You know, the first concern was Sheena's father. When he called Sheena's father that day before we knew she was even deceased, he calls her father, and he's crying, he's bawling on the phone saying, speaking of her in past tense, saying, why couldn't she have just gotten along with my kids? And that just really floored her dad.
Yeah.
But we don't even know that she's deceased yet. That was early in the day.
So Peter Hyatt's a consultant to the show, and we always say, Denny, pattern of conduct, statement analysis in the cadence of the sentencing. As a former state New York law investigator yourself, what does that say to you?
When somebody is referring to a person in the past tense, when there's no, when he shouldn't know the person is deceased at that point, that certainly is a red flag. And, it needs to be considered in any further investigation. That would be a big red flag in my opinion when you're referring to a person in the past tense.
So Kelly, you learn this, and there's, mm-hmm. he's acting this way. Mm-hmm. Now you're another person, and the person that she is dating, again, a connection to organized crime, they go down to the police station together, don't they?
Yeah, Sheena's father and the boyfriend go down to the police station to get her suitcase. When
and
they
stop,
arrive
right
at the
there.
Police...
What's that right there? Right, stop. Too quick. when they do that, and mm-hmm. has Sheena's father ever been to the police station or has ever met the detective?
No, ma'am.
Okay, so he's never met anybody, and this is not where the person to whom your daughter is seeing that he has been down there either or would have any connection with those people at that police department.
Well, I really wonder about that, Susan, because when Sheena's dad and the boyfriend got there to get her suitcase, the boyfriend introduces Sheena's father to the detective. They don't the boyfriend and the detective don't shake hands. They act like they already know each other. Sheena's father, David, shakes the detective's hand, and they hand him. They hand him her suitcase. He doesn't sit him down and say, you know, when was the last time that you talked to Sheena? You know, how did she sound? You know, what was going on? Are there any things that you're concerned about? Didn't question the father, which is odd. But which is odder is there is the boyfriend right there who was with her after this domestic violence situation, which after our meeting, they don't call it domestic violence. They're calling it some sort of altercation because she didn't tell the police, yes, he beat me. But anyway, carrying on, the detective does not sit down the boyfriend and ask him any questions either. They sign for her suitcase and they're on their way.
And then from there, it is, Dr. Berklin, 22 days. Now, there's already been a 911 phone call. There's already she's calling and saying, my purse is gone, my keys are gone. And this is disturbing, is it not?
And she said in that 911 call, he did physically hurt me.
Dr. Berklin, it doesn't seem to be that any of the investigators on this, they seem to have cut, closed and opened the case as quickly as they walked in the door.
Well, I'm a little confused. This is the first time I've heard that they're not calling it a domestic violence situation because she didn't tell them that she had been beat up. I'm sorry. If I had a couple dollar bills right now, I'd tell you to hand them to them and tell them to please try not to speak. I mean, that's just ludicrous that this is – that we're changing the name. It's not domestic violence. I mean, I don't know what the code is for, you know, not stating I had the crap beat out of me. You know, mm-hmm. And you can certainly have domestic violence beneath the level of that, and it's still called domestic violence.
It's intimate partner violence. I mean,
partner.
Sure. I think that it goes towards more of a serious offense of, you know, a bully doing something to somebody.
Sure.
You know, much less capable, and he obviously wants something.
She wasn't the only 911 phone call either. The people next door called 911 initially.
Exactly. Well, they didn't use the right terminology, obviously.
Right. No. Exactly.
But they were next door. So then this happened, and it goes towards this whole thing was seemed to be too lax, because there's also, Kelly, people who say that they see this person, Mr. Organized Crime, who is in her where she lives with these private keys that she only has on her. And allegedly, he is carrying out boxes according to accounts, right,
yes,
Kelly?
Yes, that is very correct. She would never allow him to have a key to her appointment.
Boxes that she had gathered, information she was gathering that were very damaging to this person who was known to frequent the gentlemen's clubs, was known to sell and be into steroids, was known to have many activities that were not seemingly legitimate except for that flooring company that he probably goes ahead and puts things through to make it look like something. Maybe he put in
a new
warrants for all the officers in Brayton Beach Police Department, for the detective who is continuing to refuse, actually, to participate in any kind of a common sense dialogue. It's not about that you're wrong. It's that things were missed, Dr. Berkland, and all anyone has been asking to do since this happened is for the Brayton Beach Police Department or Manatee County to go in and investigate. And based on, you know, here's a mom, Denny, who we see this in all these cases. They want to get the death certificates changed. They want an investigation. They don't get it. Here's a mother who successfully in March of 2011 has the death certificate changed. To come hell or high water, She gets Dr. Bodden. She gets Dr. Berkland. These reports are generated. And from the reports, Dr. Berkland, your conclusion throughout your expert analysis and investigation is what?
Well, the cause of death, I think everybody's in agreement with as far as it's some sort of asphyxial-type death. But the manner of death is certainly not a suicide as it was initially ruled. And the medical examiners, Dr. Bodden and myself, all agree at this time that it's no better than undetermined, which does indeed leave it open for further investigation.
I think it's important to mention, Dr. B, your expertise, the fact that not only are you a forensic pathologist, medical examiner, but you're also a certified level 3 criminal investigator.
Yeah, I was previously through the International Association for Identification. They have multiple levels of certification. The highest level they have is a certified senior crime scene analyst, and so that's largely because of all my time out at the scenes and processing scenes and assisting out there at the scenes. And in this case, the scene had the red flags that basically pointed to the fact that this isn't a suicide. I can't for the life of me figure out why the police chief down there will not just simply invite FDLE or Manatee or Hillsborough or anybody else. All they have to do is ask for assistance. And then, to me, it's kind of a no-brainer. You know, if the people that review it and everything say, hey, it looks like you did a decent job, we would have came to the same conclusion and stuff like that, then you get some verification that, you know, you did things somewhat correctly. On the other hand, if you're scared to death that they're going to come to an opposite conclusion, then you still get some points in terms of, hey, you're doing the right thing. You're trying to find out what the truth is and opening back up, unless there's something else going on in terms of there's a big vested interest in not finding out the truth because, like you said, maybe they're buddies, maybe there's some sort of familial inbreeding or something. I mean, you know, I don't know what the relationships are down there, but, I mean, obviously if somebody walks in, doesn't have to shake somebody's hand and introduces them to somebody else, that seems like a little bit of familiarity to me. You know, but it's a relative no-brainer that this could very easily be reopened up. And the fact of the matter is I think they'd lose credibility and points every single day that goes by that someone has to ask them why they haven't reopened the investigation.
And I think that they need to realize by now, you know, we have been doing this for the last 3 or 4 months. I'm not going anywhere. And all anybody wants is for the FDLE to investigate this. Go ahead, Dan. I'm sorry.
I was just going to ask Dr. Berkland, would you be able to tell us or care to tell us when you examined the records and documents and so forth, I don't know if you saw, you know, the autopsy report, toxicology reports, whatever you looked at, crime scene or scene photos, whatever, was there anything in specific that were clearly red flags to you and should have been red flags to the investigating or responding officers?
Well, there was a couple of them that should have served as red flag indicators to the law enforcement from the get-go, and those are things that it doesn't require my expertise to pick up on. The fact that you had a call out there previously for you know intimate violence, domestic violence, or whatever term that they're applying to it down there to dodge that bullet. They obviously got a call out there before that there was a problem there, okay? So that's a pretty good place to start looking when you get called back later on to, you know, come examine why there is somebody deceased in the room, okay? And so with that in mind, that's something that you don't need to be a board-certified forensic pathologist or a certified senior crime scene analyst. The postman and the milkman can probably figure that one out that something's not quite right, okay? And that perhaps that's a good starting point. You know, as far as the inside the scene itself, just the way that she is positioned in the shower, most people would not pick up on the clothing, how it was positioned, and what it really meant. But as far as some of the congestion and some of the physical findings that were there, I don't think they would have necessarily had the skill level to have picked that up. But certainly there was a huge red light, beacon, flag, whatever you want to call it, that they just had an episode there, and they didn't do any – I mean, normally when you look at these things, you try to see what the victimology is. She was not depressed. She was not, under the influence of alcohol per se. She had a very low blood alcohol level. It was New Year's Day, but nothing else in her system – the victimology is all wrong for somebody to suddenly crop up and take their own life. So that should have also served as an indicator to the police that, this doesn't fit the right victimology of somebody we'd expect. But the thing is, it was staged. The boyfriend says she's been depressed lately. Okay. And so that's a misleading statement.
And what if somebody, when they're in a hurry, you know, somebody that's not skilled at doing this, how can you tell when a crime scene such as this one, in your opinion, and it goes to the reports, that this was a staged crime scene? You called it sloppy.
It was. These people, they're under a lot of they're inexperienced, coupled with the fact that they that they're attempting to alter a scene. In a highly emotional state, they're not thinking clearly, and they're trying to put it to the way they think a scene would look. And your average person out there doesn't know how a real scene looks unless they're prior law enforcement or something, because they don't get invited in on to look at the scenes. And the depiction on TV and stuff just isn't all that great. I mean, it's enhanced for TV. But, plus they tend to make the misleading statements to the investigators, sending them off in a different direction. And in this case, you take a hanging, of which, once again, the percentages are about 98% suicidal, and then you couple that with a few misleading statements of her being depressed and stuff like that, and they just overlooked everything else about, you know, she was in good spirits, had really no reason to do this, no significant alcohol level, had the ability with money to simply take a taxi. I mean, they just kind of overlooked all that because they had already made up their mind of what it was. And there
she had no way to leave. You know what I mean? I mean, he leaves with the vehicle. She has no way to go. This is all very, you know, kindergarten kind of thing. And they don't do their job. And again, like you said earlier, that they're embarrassed. But they shouldn't be embarrassed because here's a mother from day one who has jumped up and down and done everything in her power to get the when she gets it changed after her own investigation of what really goes on with her daughter, what really happens, pattern of conduct before, during, and after, both of the victim and of the offender. And he's never once dealt with. It's 22 days later. They don't do anything. They don't even check out alibis for 10, you know, 12 months, something like that. And she continues. And then when the death certificate gets changed to undetermined in March this year, shouldn't that be enough for them to open this up at least and reinvestigate the case?
Well, it was enough. Sure, it was enough for the medical examiners to realize that this thing is best classified as undetermined, to leave it open for the ability of an investigation to take place. You know, everyone's conscientious about the fact that the state and the law enforcement won't expend money to investigate suicides. But on the other hand, when it's undetermined and it's an open-ended investigation, there's no reason for them not to investigate it. It just baffles, you know, the onlooker to figure out why won't they take a look at this unless they're just embarrassed. And I can tell you the way this will play out. The officer that did the investigation and the other people, eventually someone's going to start tagging them in court. When they show up for other cases, somebody's going to say, have you ever made a mistake on ruling on a case before and not doing an investigation where the medical examiner disagreed with what you did? And it's eventually going to catch up with them. They're going to start getting tagged, and their credibility in court's going to start going down, and then they become a liability to the department, and the department will then sever their affiliation with them.
Even if it's a small department like this?
Yeah, even if it's a small department, eventually they will find their way in court. They will bump into just the right defense attorney that's not necessarily a public defender, or it could be a public defender, but they'll bump into just the right combination of people, and the facts will get out, and lo and behold, they will have a very unpleasant deposition and an even more unpleasant courtroom appearance. And, once again, all they're going to try to do is impeach them. And once they get thoroughly impeached in a depo or in court, you can measure their career then pretty much with an egg timer.
You just gave me a fodder for a blog post. Denny, what about, Denny, the families that we have on every week on these cases, they're the ones that have to hire a Dr. Brooklyn, Dr. Bodden. They don't have the resources. Kelly has spent thousands upon thousands of dollars for justice. Dr. Brooklyn, someone like him, she's lucky to find him, in my opinion, because of his skills, because of how he looks at this case, because of what he does. And week after week, we are continuing to see these cases come forth and the family's burden for the truth when it should be, at least, you know, like in Oklahoma recently, they now have, with the medical examiner's office, they have now a law in place, reform the Shonda Turner Medical Act, which allows them to go past and have a hearing at least based on the determination that is or isn't done. And here is a mom who finally gets something done, and they refuse. And we're seeing all these families spend all this money. Penny, do you think that this is a trend of some sort, that we're going to see this more and more?
Well, it's unfortunate it has to come to that, but when you get an agency or agencies that what seems blatantly to disregard evidence and disregard the facts and just want to shut something down and in fact never even start it, not just shut it down, but never even do anything, I don't know what the solution is for the families. Hopefully parents will be like Kelly and other parents that we've met and dealt with, and they will not let these things lie and die. they will keep the fight going. And doctor, could I get back just a minute to the changing of the death certificate?
Sure.
It's my understanding that you and Dr. Botten both reviewed the reports and so forth. And then what did you do? Did you I assume were at least in touch with the medical examiner. I don't know if you had a face-to-face or mail or how you did it. But.
I actually drove down there to the medical examiner's office and met with the actual pathologist that performed the autopsy, as well as the chief medical examiner for that district. And we had a fairly lengthy discussion. They raised some questions. They were very, very professional. I have absolutely nothing bad to say about them. They listened to the facts, which is what a neutral, unbiased fact finder should always do. So they behaved perfectly. And after I presented the case, they looked at each other, and they basically got back a few days later with Kelly and said they were changing the death certificate, that they thought undetermined was the best answer based on our presentation. So. Once again, nothing but kudos for the medical examiners for admitting that, you know, they didn't necessarily have all the stuff initially and listening to the arguments.
Well, that
yes,
is encouraging.
Yes, and they not only did they handle that professionally, but they apologized, and they also said that they should have done this sooner.
And let me ask you this, and Kelly, maybe you and Dr. Berkland maybe none of us are familiar with the law there, but it almost seems that once you get an undetermined death, now that Sheena's death has been reclassified to undetermined, wouldn't there be a requirement? I mean, is it just the option? Is it a voluntary thing in the part of the police department? Say, yeah, we're going to investigate this one, but not that one. We like this guy. We didn't like that guy.
Yeah.
It almost seems it will be mandatory that once they a death, that there's no definitive answer to how that person died, they would be required to look into it.
Sure.
Right.
It is,
I'm glad you brought that up.
It is not required.
Pardon me, Doctor?
It is or it is not?
It is not required.
Okay.
And that occasionally happens. I tell you, you see more aggressive investigation if at the end of the autopsy, the medical examiner is in disagreement in terms of it being suspicious for foul play or something, and the police believing it is suspicious, there will be more of an investigation into that death than one where the medical examiner is suspicious, but the police have already made the ruling. If that makes
I can
sense.
Explain why they're not reopening the investigation.
Okay.
I can explain this.
Okay.
First of all, they're saying the FDLE did look at it, but the problem is that the FDLE only got the police reports, the autopsy report, and the official reports. But what they haven't gotten was my 7-hour presentation that I made to the mayor and the city's attorney there.
Kelly, explain when you did this, which was just a few weeks back. And you got two time slots to meet with them. And you met with them. Was the chief of police there as well?
Yeah. Now, the chief of police for 2.5 years refused to meet with me or take a phone call for 2.5 years. And finally, the wonderful mayor of Bradenton Beach, who I think, with what his ability is as a mayor, he recommended or demanded, I believe, I'm not sure which, but I know that the chief for 2.5 years wouldn't meet with me, finally called this meeting and got this set up, and also had the city's attorney at this meeting. The first meeting was 4 hours long. Through my presentation, we still
and
couldn't
tell them,
get
explain
through the
real
details.
Quick what the presentation was. I mean, this was not, this was a step-by-step. You had a storyboard. You presented information to each of them. And you talked about the case, many details that they weren't aware of, were they?
That's very correct. Many details that almost everybody is not aware of, such as this is the first time it's coming out in the public forum right here on this show, some of the things that I released that have been found, such as the police reports were falsified to begin with. First of all, you can't possibly respond to a 911 domestic call at 1:21 a.m. when the call wasn't even dispatched until 1:46. Part of the problem, they report false information in the reports stating that there was beer in the room. There was no beer in the room. The other problem is one of the officers who also, which appalls me, that this officer was in the same room responding to a call to my 22-year-old daughter in a hotel room. He was under investigation.
With sexual
harassment. I know, but
no,
my daughter's in that room with this officer. So carrying on, that same officer, he's reporting to be not only on my daughter's call for the 911 call, but he's also somewhere else at the same time. But apparently it's not any big deal to the police department that, you know, sometimes these reports just, you know, they just get changed.
But
when
the detective does a media interview, and basically what does he say in the media interview?
He calls me a mother in denial.
That's right. So stop. Dr. Berkland, what is this about a sworn law enforcement officer in anywhere in the country that would not look at facts and then try to turn it around and say that to somebody? And to me, that's very disrespectful as well.
Well, it's extremely disrespectful. I mean, all of us that have done this line of work for very long, particularly in the medical examiner setting, we catch people at their absolute worst time. They've lost a loved one and stuff like that. And to try to soothe things over, no matter how many times you have to go over this stuff, to try to soothe things over by just calling somebody in denial, that's weak at best. I'm a little confused. I want to clarify one thing with my... You said FTLE said they had investigated this. How is it that they did that without talking to Dr. Bodden or myself?
Right.
Okay, I missed that. So they collected an autopsy report, a police report, and that was the extent of their investigation?
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. I invited the FDLE, and they told me that they could not investigate unless the employing agency requested
Correct.
To investigate. That would be the chief of police. Well, the chief of police wouldn't even talk to me, and he's not going to do that because he and the detective are quote-unquote family. They're family there. That was what we were told.
Of course they are.
Now the next employing agency is the mayor, and that's when I went to the mayor, and the mayor is the one who got this meeting and got the city attorney. The city attorney was very professional. The mayor was very professional. The second part of the meeting, I had to request that Detective Diaz was not there. And here's part of the reason, and again, this is the first time coming out in public with this. I had finally spoken with the alibi.
Right.
And I was explained that the detective called the boyfriend. Now, this is 10 months later when our attorney demands the detective to check on this alibi. The detective called the boyfriend to let him know he was going to call his alibi. So then the boyfriend calls the alibi and says, "You're going to be getting a phone call from Detective Diaz. Don't worry about it.
Let me stop you right there if I can, Kelly. That seems like an ethical issue at the very least, and that might be something to pursue. That is ethically not a standard of police investigation, to where you call the person up that you're investigating and you tip them that you're going to talk to his alibi witness.
Exactly. So I have asked if there's been any disciplinary done on that. No, there hasn't.
Of course. Okay. Not the wrong family.
We can put that on the blog. We're also coming down on time. So what is the outcome then after the meeting, Kelly? What happens with the mayor and the corporation council there? What do they tell you after you've presented for over 2 weeks, 7 hours total? What are they going to get back to you? Are they going to follow up with you? Well, how did they leave it when you concluded your presentation on the case?
Here's what they told me. I need to have hard evidence through my investigation, and that they will bring it to the Manatee County Sheriff. However, they said I needed to package it up and give it to them so it goes through the proper channels. They would not open it or seal it. However, they want me to come up with the evidence. And then when they contacted the sheriff's department and said, will you accept a package if this is delivered with evidence, and the Manatee County Sheriff said, no, we will not, you will contact the FBI. However, it is my job to get the concrete evidence, otherwise they won't do a damn thing.
Are you supposed to also notify Diaz so he can tip off everybody as to what you have in the sealed packet?
That's exactly what they basically wanted me to do.
Well, we know a couple things, Denny, as we do every week. The persons who are involved with this case and the person who did the crime are either going to be listening live right now, where they are in the after broadcast listening to these words. Again, I think what Kelly started this at the end of March, all the way through various shows, various things that we've done. We are not going away. Crime Wire is not going away. I'm not going away. And I've got some other things that are going to be happening. It is in the best interest of the state of Florida. FDLE, get your derrieres in there because I am not going away. And if you think that, you know, you haven't heard us shout from the mountaintops or from the swamps of Florida, some other things that are coming down the road, that, you know, it's going to be embarrassing. And all you're going to be able to do is on a national television program be told and be seen by the world as no comment. This mother is a searcher for the Q Center who goes and covers and searches for loved ones across the country for missing persons. Monica Quezon, who is a consultant to Crime Wire, who brings cases out here every week. She brought the Waller case on a couple of weeks ago. Kelly Osborne was out searching not very far away for Kelly Rothwell, not very far away from where her own daughter was. Out there in the elements looking for Kelly Rothwell, the police cadet who's been missing since March 12th of this year, of 2011. This woman is out there, and this is how the state of Florida repays? Huh? This is beyond despicable. It's beyond tragic. All anybody wants.
The pressure, you say, Susan, has to be kept on. And I just had a question, and this just came to mind, and maybe it won't make any sense, but would this be the type of case, and I don't know what this would cost, and I don't know the statute of limitations for this in Florida, but would a wrongful death civil suit, if the police weren't going to investigate, have given the family an opportunity to get this ex-boyfriend and other people depoed? If the police aren't going to interview them, would that be some way to do it?
There's a statute of limitations of 2 years on a wrongful death suit. But for murder, there is no statute of limitations.
But there's also no statute based on the fact that the determination of the death certificate was just changed, so the clock probably starts ticking then, like it did in the other cases.
But there's no attorney who will take this on because they are not guaranteed any money because they're not sure, because the boyfriend's hidden all his money.
Kelly Osborne, do not say there's no. You have gotten very far in this case, and you should be very proud. And we have come through and gone through a lot of obstacles. If there's a will, there's a way. I will work on someone to possibly take this. So don't even go there, because there is a possibility. There's maybe not a possibility with to whom you've spoken, but you do have a case here, and you do have some real substantive issues that perhaps we can get some people to pay attention to. And we can start calling. Yes.
Just one last thing. FDLE said they investigated this case, but they sent Kelly two letters saying they can't investigate it unless they're invited to investigate it. So I'm confused. Which story are we believing from FDLE?
Thank you, Dr. Berglund. That is very confusing. They're telling me they can't investigate it on my behalf, but the chief of police says that the FDLE did look at their records, and they don't find any problem with anything.
We are out of time, and I'm sorry. Thank you so much to Dr. Berglund. Please visit Sheena Morris's website, justice4, sheena.com. Thank you to the CrimeWire team, our director of research, Kim Colton, and public relations team at imaginepublicity.com. Our next show will be Tuesday, August 9th, 2011. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases, crimes that interrupt and wreak havoc on families looking for answers and seeking justice.
Thank you for joining us tonight on CrimeWire. We always welcome your support and value you as our guest. If you would like your case to be featured on CrimeWire, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. And you can hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show by going to www.crimewire.blogspot.com. Turn on the volume at your computer and the show will automatically play. And remember, we ensure that your voices will be heard when there is nowhere else to turn. Visit our website at www.crimewiresite.com. God bless from the CrimeWire team, Vito Colucci Jr., Denny Griffin, Tom Shamshak, and Susan Murphy Milano. Thank you and good night.
Thank you, Cal. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you very much, everyone.
All right. All right, we'll talk soon.
Good night.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. Good night.
Good night.